Greetings and welcome to the Gloucester Daily Time for Thursday, August 20th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Krein. Today's lead story, trash pickup to cost $300 a year, new contract to begin October 1. It's written by Bobby Grady. Gloucester recently signed its new trash contract, which is set to begin October 1st, which means residents will no longer need to buy purple bags, but can expect trash fees to go up. The mayor's office announced the new contract, negotiated for several months by Public Works Director Mike Hale, and the details impacting residents Wednesday. The new contract was awarded to Casella Waste Management, not former trash hauler Republic Services, and will do away with the old purple bag system. Instead, trucks with an automatic arm will go around the city emptying trash and recycling receptacles. Single-family homes, along with multifamily properties up to 4 units, will be automatically enrolled into the standard trash and recycling service. Included in the standard service is a trash bin and recycling bin, both holding 65 gallons, costing residents $75 per quarter or $300 annually. There is a size-down option where residents will get a 35-gallon trash bin, and their choice of a 35 or 65-gallon recycling bin, costing residents $50 per quarter or $200 annually. Residents 65 years old or older are eligible to receive a 50% discount at their primary residence. Anyone with a private trash and recycling contract may also opt out of the city's service altogether. According to the statement from the mayor's office, most of the bins will be distributed the week of September 3, but trash in purple bags will be collected that week. Wednesday, September 3 will be the final day for appliance pickup under the yellow sticker program. September 30 will be the last day purple bags will be picked up, as the new contract will begin October 1st. All trash must fit inside the city-issued containers, and overflow bags will not be collected. Hale said only the city-issued containers will be accepted, and the Department of Public Works is going to organize times where residents can bring their old trash barrels to the public works to be disposed of for no cost. Appliance pickups will occur monthly under the new contract, and bulk items will be accepted on Fridays. Residents can schedule these services with Casella by calling 800-227-3552. Again, the number for the new trash pickup service provider is 800-227-3552. New in this contract is the recycling cost. Hale said the city had been able to negotiate recycling disposal costs out of previous contracts, but now the cost per ton of recycling disposal is exceeding the cost per ton of trash disposal. Hale said any modern disposal contract looks this way. "You've more than doubled the disposal cost," he said. The choice of Casella over other haulers, including Republic Services, came down to what was best for the city, according to Hale. Last year's strike by trash collectors was not a deciding factor. To secure the size down option, senior discount, or opt out, residents must fill out the proper forms at gloucester-ma.gov. The deadline to fill out these forms is August 31st. Residents can request additional containers as well at Gloucester, at the same address, www.gloucester-ma.gov. Anyone seeking assistance with the forms can head to the Rose Baker Center for Aging Well at 6 Manuel F. Lewis Street on Tuesday, August 25th from 9 to 11 and Friday, August 28th from 11 a.m. to noon. Residents can also head to Cape Ann Veteran Services, to Cape Ann Veteran Services at 12 Emerson Avenue on Tuesday, August 25th from noon to 2 p.m. and August 28th from 9 to 10 a.m. Candidates talk priorities, audit, climate change. It's written by Bobby Grady. Cape Ann's Democratic City and Town Committees hosted candidates Andrew Drutar and Sarah Wilkinson for a forum where they discussed their priorities and answered a number of questions from residents. Tar, the 5th Essex District's state representative and former Rockport Select Board member Sarah Wilkinson are vying to secure the Democratic nomination for the state representative seat in the September 1 primary. Both Tarr and Wilkinson competed for the spot during the special primary held earlier this year, with Wilkinson mounting a write-in campaign. Tarr ultimately won the seat, filling out the remainder of Anne Margaret Ferranti's term following her passing in November last year. The state primary is preceding the November 3 state election, where the winner of the Democratic nomination likely will compete against Manchester by the Sea's Christina DeLisio, the sole Republican vying for the seat, and Essex Independent Gilbert Frieden. Both DeLisio and Frieden competed against Tarr during the special election. Tuesday night's forum was online and was hosted by interim Gloucester Democratic City Committee Chair Ronnie R-A-N-I Jacobson, and opened with each candidate highlighting their top priorities. Tarr said his main priorities have not changed much since the special election and are housing affordability, education, economic development, and to, quote, bring resources back to Cape Ann communities. To address housing affordability, Tarr said more work needs to be done to increase the housing supply on Cape Ann and promote affordable housing, a state-defined restriction to help curb housing costs and housing that people can afford. We need to prioritize these types of restricted housing for seniors and affordable housing so that we're not just saying we'll let the market work it out, Tarr said. We need places for teachers, fishermen, people that work in retail. That's going to be one of the first places I look at in terms of addressing housing. Wilkinson, an 18-year Rockport selectwoman with five terms as chair, said being the voice of Cape Ann and bringing its leaders together to address local issues while pushing for transparency and the audit of the state legislature were some of her top priorities if elected. At the local level, we operate under transparency requirements. We are audited every single year, and we conduct the people's business in public. That is how government should work, Wilkinson said. If our elected leaders aren't willing to make their own government transparent and accountable, how can we trust them with anything? Following the candidates' opening remarks, the forum was open to questions from the audience. One question from David Kaplan asked Tarr to explain his stance on the audit. Tarr said he is absolutely in favor of an audit of the legislature, but had concerns with its scope. The auditor has had a number of versions of what her scope for the audit has been. Some of that, I believe, has been unconstitutional, but not the financial audit. I'm totally fine with, he said. In the House, we had specifically addressed four of the things that the auditor had said she was looking for, both in an earlier letter to the legislature. While only a few questions solicited any back and forth between the candidates, Wilkinson responded to Tarr on the audit, calling his response ridiculous. That to me is why I keep hearing from everyone that people are increasingly losing trust in our government, she said. If you truly believe in accountability and transparency, you will find a way to make it happen. Sonny Robinson asked the candidates to dive deeper into their priorities and what they would do to enact change. Wilkinson said, besides the audit, many people told her to keep fishermen and veterans in mind and to do something about housing. I think the state rep's job is to get all four communities together and say what are our priorities in terms of housing, schools, infrastructure, the local economies, and see how we can collaborate, then bring that to the state and feds, she said. Tarr outlined that he would support education and economic development, largely through finding better ways to fund both areas. A big campaign point for Tarr since the special election has been reforming Chapter 70, the regulations the state uses to supply school funding. He said he wants to make targeted investments in areas such as Gloucester High School's vocational school and the Gloucester Biotechnology Academy to boost both education and economic development. If you can give someone a great education and give them an opportunity to succeed, they will find a way to succeed, he said. Other questions had to do with the candidates' thoughts on what can be done at the state level to combat climate change and its effects on Cape Ann. Marcy Bailey posed the first climate change question, asking what can be done at the state level, especially given that $2.7 million in federal funding to aid in the repair of Long Beach's seawall was recently rescinded. Both Wilkinson and Tarr said the state cannot make up all the federal dollars lost and called for voters to elect climate-minded federal officials to advocate for Cape Ann in Washington. Wilkinson also said they need to look at what other countries are doing to find unique and innovative solutions to climate-related issues. I believe it's Finland that has solutions to dealing with seawalls that don't involve just rebuilding barrier seawalls on the ocean. And we all know the ocean is rising. This is very real, and we're going to have to deal with it, she said. Tarr said advocating for grant funding to invest in clean energy and climate-friendly infrastructure, as well as initiatives such as seawall repair, is one way to make up some of the funding lost. We're going to have to look at some different ways to put our funds and thoughts into action to invest in our green infrastructure and make sure we're securing everything that we can, Tarr said. Stay with politics for another article. GOP hopefuls vying for shot at Healey. It's run by Christian Wade. State House reporter, Boston. Republicans Mike Minogue and Brian Shortsleeve will face off in the upcoming GOP primary for a chance to challenge incumbent Democratic Governor Mara Healey in the general election. Minogue, the former CEO of a biomedical device company and a top Republican donor, cinched the state Republican Party's endorsement with a landslide win at the GOP's convention in April, picking up 70% of the votes from about 1,800 party delegates. He argues that Massachusetts is falling behind economically because of regulations, high taxes, and democratic policies that have hurt the middle class and businesses. Massachusetts isn't working for everyone, Minogue says in a 30-second campaign ad. The political elite are doing fine, but families struggle to pay their energy bills, health care, child care, and their jobs are leaving. On the campaign trail, the former combat veteran has focused largely on Healey's tenure in the governor's office and argues that the one-party system in Massachusetts is, quote, overspending, overtaxing, overregulating, and forcing businesses elsewhere as rising costs squeezed household budgets. Minogue has vowed, if elected governor, to repeal the MBTA Communities Act, which requires cities and towns to, on the transit system, to provide more zoning for multifamily housing. Roll back the state's sanctuary protections that limit cooperation with federal immigration agents and overhaul clean energy policies that he says are driving up energy costs. Shortsleeve, a venture capitalist and former MBTA official, launched his campaign last year, pledging to bring common sense conservative leadership to Beacon Hill and prioritize cutting wasteful government spending and taxes to help make Massachusetts more affordable. Everything is more expensive with Mara Healey in the corner office, he said in a recent campaign statement. We spent hundreds of millions of dollars on emergency housing for migrants while homeless veterans sleep on the streets. And we're dead last in job growth nationwide. That's not leadership, it's failure. On the campaign trail, Shortsleeve has criticized Minogue as a political newcomer, arguing that his experience on Beacon Hill gives him a better chance of defeating Healey. In a recent op-ed, Shortsleeve pointed out that Massachusetts has one of the highest SNAP payment, those are food stamps, what used to be called food stamps, payment error rates in the country, with taxpayers possibly on the hook for $300 million a year in penalties from the federal government, and pointed to his efforts to root out fraud during the Baker administration. When Governor Baker called me to turn around a government in crisis, I audited everything. Cut the waste, put fraudsters in jail, he said. As governor, I will bring that same approach to every agency on Beacon Hill. At the party's convention, Shortsleeve picked up 16% of the vote from delegates, placing second and earning him a spot on the primary ballot. He had previously qualified for the ballot by submitting the required number of signatures. A University of Massachusetts poll released this week showed Minogue leading Shortsleeve 53% to 36% among likely GOP voters, with about 18% of those surveys still undecided. The winner of the GOP gubernatorial primary will face Healey, a first-term Democrat, in the November 3rd election. Healey, who's seeking another 4-year term, isn't facing a primary challenger. former prosecutor and state attorney general. She made history in 2022 to become the first Massachusetts first woman and openly lesbian governor and returned the office to Democratic hands for the first time in a decade. Healey launched her reelection bid in January with a video and new campaign website that touted her accomplishments over the past 3 years and laid out her plans for a second term. In the lieutenant governor's race, Shortsleeve's running mate, New Bedford City Councilor Sean Oliver, is the only candidate on the Republican ticket. That's because several other GOP hopefuls running for the second-in-command post were knocked off the primary ballot after failing to submit the required number of signatures to qualify. The GOP candidates, including Peabody at-large Councilwoman Ann Manning Martin, say they were duped by a higher... They were duped by a hired signature gatherer who turned in fraudulent petitions. Manning Martin is running as a write-in candidate. Oliver will face incumbent Democratic Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll in the November elections. Like Healey, Driscoll faces no opposition on the Democratic primary ballot. Even though candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run separately in party primaries, winners are matched on the general election ballot. Overall, Republicans face long odds winning control of Beacon Hill, with Democrats holding the governor's office, attorney general, and other constitutional offices, and a supermajority in the state House of Representatives and Senate. Registered Democrats outnumber Republicans by a 3-to-1 margin. Recent polls have shown Healey with a double-digit advantage over her Republican challengers, with many voters not familiar with the challengers. Despite that, the state's voters have a tradition of sending GOP candidates to the governor's office, with five of the state's last six chief executives being Republicans. The Democratic Party has criticized both of the GOP challengers, seeking to align them with Republican President Donald Trump, who remains unpopular in this deep blue state. And wrapping up the front page, lettuce eaters shopping local. Farmers Market sees uptick after outbreaks. It's written by Stephen Hagen. Concerns about cyclospora-tainted lettuce and jalapeno peppers linked to a salmonella outbreak, both sold across the country, has driven some consumers, including those on Cape Ann, from their favorite markets to local farmers markets. Cassandra Parkhurst, farmers market manager for Backyard Growers, said she has recently seen a jump in buyers seeking to purchase healthy produce at the Backyard Grocery, and grocery is spelled G-R-O-W-C-E-R-Y, clever. The Backyard Grocery Market held Wednesdays from 2:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Burnham's Field in Gloucester. The last market of the season will be September 30th. I think we're seeing an uptick in customers, she said. We want to make sure we respond to those sort of outbreaks. Parkhurst said farmers who supply the operation are responding directly to what the customers want in light of the current situation. Part of it is being so close and so small, she said. There's no bureaucracy. Courtney Allen, Communications and Outreach Director for Backyard Growers, agrees with Parkhurst's assessment of local food shoppers turning to the market. The number of people coming into the market is increasing, Allen said. We've gotten direct feedback that a lot of customers are responding to the situation. When you shop at your local farmers market, you support your own local food system and your community food security, she said. You're not just relying on a huge farm that's thousands of miles away. Elliot Lyman with First Light Farm in Hamilton was shaded under a tent from the blazing sun during Wednesday's market. He said the number of his customers seems to be growing. I just feel like a lot of people are buying stuff. I feel like every week is a lot. Luann Bonanno of Methuen's Pleasant Valley Gardens said she has seen the farm's lettuce sales rise, especially iceberg lettuce. I've noticed an increase, Bonanno said. For Bailey McCall, Gloucester's sustainability coordinator, the decision to shop for produce at the Backyard Grocery was an easy choice. I definitely feel safer buying from a farmer's market rather than a supermarket, she said. Gloucester's Emily Glover also said she feels more confident buying produce from local growers. I'd rather buy directly from a farmer's market, she said. At-large city councilor Patty Ann Page was one of several dozen customers waiting in line to purchase produce. She said she's aware of the reports of contaminated produce from around the country. I am a little more careful, she said. I won't buy compromised produce. The concerns about tainted produce are linked to processed iceberg lettuce from central Mexico that were contaminated with the microscopic parasite Cyclospora, the ingestion of which causes gastrointestinal illness. The outbreak began May 1st, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said as of August 17, it had received reports of 15,716 laboratory-confirmed cases, 828 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. In addition, the agency reported is investigating multiple clusters, including a new outbreak involving 72 people. A multi-state salmonella outbreak that began June 19th triggered a voluntary recall of fresh jalapeno peppers from Sinaloa, Mexico, distributed by Coast Citrus Distributors, alongside secondary recalls of prepared foods and fresh products containing the peppers by brands like Taylor Fresh Foods, Whole Foods, and Nature Best. More than 430 people have been infected and 57 hospitalized as of Wednesday, according to the CDC, but no related illness has been reported in New England, fortunately. The Cyclospora outbreak comes on top of an already difficult year for the lettuce industry and those who love eating salads. The retail price of a pound of iceberg lettuce jumped nearly 20% between January and June of this year, according to government data. Consumers paid an average of 33% more last month for all fresh lettuce compared to a year earlier, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said. Lettuce has been previously linked to multiple food poisoning outbreaks, including 2 in 2018 involving E. coli linked to romaine lettuce grown in Arizona and California. Part of the problem, according to Elizabeth Canellas, an associate professor of agricultural economics at Mississippi State University, has been the rise in fuel costs, which jumped after the U.S. and Israel launched strikes on Iran and many oil tankers were blocked access through the Persian Gulf. The cold chain needs to be maintained, Canella said. Cooling it and transporting it is very important. We have time for a few letters today. Fishing pier match for harbor. Regarding city looking into possibility of constructing public fishing pier from the Times on August 14th, I have been saying for years Gloucester lacks a public site where families who don't have access to boats can still share some experiences. In my years serving in the U.S. Coast Guard, I have experienced many of these fishing piers along the whole East Coast in many ports. An idea was brought up quite a few years back when a development grant was available and unfortunately received negative pushback from residents and for some reason never went anywhere. A well-constructed fishing pier would not only add to the beautiful character of our harbor, but would provide great recreational experiences for families. A friend recently called me a few weeks back from a trip he had taken down to Virginia with his family. He said the highlight of his trip was a day spent on a local fishing pier open to the public. For a short fee of $20, he was given a day pass to spend on the pier. He had packed a lunch and enjoyed a full day fishing with his son that made everlasting memories for them. For years, as I have hauled lobster gear in Gloucester Harbor, I have envisioned such a pier in the location of the tennis courts down off Stacy Boulevard. What a perfect location. Close to Stage Ford Park, public parking, the playground, visitor booth, and tucked right in the far corner of our beautiful boulevard. Not only is it a great location, but the area is rich in species to catch, such as flounder, skate, striped bass, mackerel, and squid. I was pleased to see this article to potentially revisit such a project on Commercial Street. It would be a great addition to our harbor that would provide everlasting memories to families. Hopefully this time the project moves forward, and that's written by Dean DeCoste of Gloucester. You may not like picks, but vote. I dropped my ballot in the mail today. If you're not sure where you'll be on primary day, September 1st, it's not too late to get a mail ballot. But whatever you do, make a plan to vote. By mail, in person, when early voting starts, or on the day itself, it's more important than ever. Let me tell you how I voted in the 3 contested races in the Democratic primary and hope you'll join me. I've already written about Drew Tarr and how proud I am of how he stepped confidently into the role of state representative for which he had been training for a decade. He has picked up the mantle of his mentor and friend, Anne Margaret Fronte, and made it his own. I've known Ed Markey since he was a young state representative back in the 70s when I was working in the first Dukakis administration. That makes us both old, but although he's a good bit younger than I am, but he's still got it. The vitality, the tenacity, the values that have characterized his whole career in public service. He has never wavered from the brilliant slogan of his first congressional campaign after the House Speaker had punished him for his independence by moving his desk into the basement hallway of the State House. They can tell me where to sit, but they can't tell me where to stand. That's Ed, as true today as it was then. He has my enthusiastic support. But the candidate I'm most excited about this year is Dan Coe, who is running for Congress in the 6th District. Smart, tough, experienced at every level of government. Dan is the leader we need in this at this perilous time in our country. He will confront the anti-democratic agenda of the Trump administration, working to abolish ICE and fighting for comprehensive immigration reform. He will fight to end the corruption in Washington. He will fight to reverse Trump's gutting of the Affordable Care Act and support Medicare for all. He will fight to end Trump's harmful tariffs and make life more affordable for all of us. Finally, Belcito, best choice for Congress. It's with pleasure and encouragement that I recommend you to join me in voting for Jamie Belcito for the 6th Congressional District seat. I have known and worked with Jamie over the last 6 years on public and mental health issues and know her to be very thoughtful, well-informed, and first and foremost concerned for the well-being of all residents in the district. Addressing all the interrelated issues is a perspective Jamie excels in, as she does also in refusing all corporate PAC, super PAC, AIPAC, and billionaire contributions. Please join me in voting for Jamie Belcito, the best candidate for the 6th Congressional District in the Democratic primary on September 1st. And that's written by Sonny Robinson, a resident of Gloucester. Thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. And of course, have a great evening.